Honourable members, that brings us to our last presentation by our content advisor, Ms. Esther Mofiwe. Esther, over to you.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will go straight into the presentation. I'm going to cover the annual budget process broadly and the sector analysis. My presentation is structured as follows. First, I will give an overview of the annual budget process in terms of what is the budget, the legal framework, the role players in the budget cycle, the cycle itself, where are we currently, and some documentation for budget oversight. And then I'll go into the sector analysis, the recent global economic developments, the domestic developments in the economy, and also look at what are some of the policy pronouncements from the South African government. What are the implications for us as the committee on finance? What are the emerging trends? Having done oversight and engaged with the provincial department, and what must the committee do? Okay, the purpose of this part of the presentation, like I said, is just to give a broad overview. And before I go into the process, just to explain what is a budget. A budget is meant to be a planning tool that translates policy into service delivery through allocation of scarce resources against competing needs or priorities. It is a process through which revenue gets allocated across the three spheres of government. Members should remember or know that the South African government has placed reducing poverty and the persistently high levels of inequality on top of its agenda, along with reducing the high rate of unemployment. South Africa is one of the countries with the highest levels of inequality in the distribution of income, meaning the benefits of economic growth at the time that the economy was growing have not been shared equally between various population groups or between or across geographical areas. So irrespective of the measure of inequality that we use, whether it's the Gini coefficient, which is the most commonly used measure of inequality in terms of the distribution of income, the levels remain high by international standards. The latest figure of the Gini coefficient is 0.7 according to the National Planning Commission. Statistically, I think it's putting the figure on 0.8. So what happens is, for equality to be achieved, you need to be as close between 0 and 1. You need to be as close to 0 as possible. In our case, we are close to 1. So that's very high by international standards. So the budget can be used. It can be act as a potential tool for redistribution and development in society. In terms of the legal framework, our system of fiscal oversight is based on the Constitution, the PFMA, the MFMA, the Money Bills Act, the DORA, the Appropriation Bill. I will not talk about the DORA and the Appropriation Bill. That's for Appropriations Committee. Just to highlight, in terms of the Constitution, Parliament is mandated or has been mandated to scrutinize and oversee executive actions to ensure accountability. In the Constitution, I've mentioned the sections where members can go check their oversight mandate and the processes, oversight processes. In terms of the PSMA as well, the objective of the Act was to ensure transparency, accountability, and sound management of revenue and expenditure. The MSMA as well, in broad terms, it regulates the local government finances. And the money bills. The money bills amendment procedure and related matters act, it's popularly known as the Money Bills Act. The Act was enacted to provide for a procedure to amend money bills before Parliament. Before 2009, Parliament could not amend the money bills. We could only accept or reject. So the bill, it gives us power as Parliament to consider amending the money bills during the budget. To give effect also to Section 77 of the Constitution, which says an Act of Parliament must provide for a procedure to amend money bills before Parliament. And while we are still on the Money Bills Act, Sections 4, 1 and 15 of the Act provides for the establishment of 4 committees of finance and appropriations and the budget, parliamentary budget office, respectively. We use a lot of acronyms. I'll read them out loud as I talk, but members will get used to the acronyms as time goes on. The Act also sets out reporting requirements in terms of the medium-term budget policy statement, the fiscal framework, the BRRR report, budget review and recommendations report, the division of revenue and appropriations. And also to mention that this committee, our committee has been established in terms of this Act. So Section 4.2, it gives the finance committees, our committee and the Standing Committee on Finance, powers and functions to consider and report on the macroeconomic and fiscal policy, the fiscal framework and revenue proposals, and actual revenue published by National Treasury. And I think Chairperson also indicated that we make recommendations when we write our reports based on the MPDTS and the national budget. So Section 7.4 provides that the Minister of Finance must report to both houses at the time of the tabling of the budget on how those recommendations were taken into consideration. This is another piece of information, the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act, that the members may also need to familiarize themselves with, and the mandating procedures of provinces. I won't go into details on that one. Some of the role players in the budget cycle, 4 committees of finance and appropriations and OPA. My colleagues have spoken on this. I will pass. Also for members to note, the Parliamentary Budget Office, the newly established office that we would need to work closely with, particularly perhaps in terms of amending the money bills, because we kept on saying we don't have the capacity to do that. So there has been progress in the PBO in terms of capacity and establishing the office. Those resources can should be used going forward. This slide just shows a schematic presentation of the budget cycle and some of the milestones. I would also not spend time on this one. I think members have been given enough information. The slide explains the previous diagram. In terms of where we are currently, we have just approved the fiscal framework in March 2014, following the tabling of the national budget in February 2014. I'm also indicating that on a quarterly basis, as the previous speakers have alluded to, we engage with the provincial treasuries on the finances of the provincial departments. So what's on the agenda now, the fiscal framework will be tabled in October, and this committee must consider and report on the fiscal framework sometime in November. I also won't go into the details with the budget documentation. Okay. I will move on to the next presentation. The sector analysis. The purpose of this presentation is to provide an update of the development in the domestic and the global economy post the tabling of the national budget by the Minister of Finance in February 2014, because indeed there has been some developments, there has been some changes. The economic outlook has deteriorated since. That has got a bearing on economic growth and revenue prospects. I'm going to start with the global economic development, what happened recently. But before I do that, let me take members back to explain why when we do analysis, we start globally. Post-1994, following the trade liberalization and subsequent removal of sanctions and trade barriers, we became integrated South Africa into the global economy. While there are many other benefits of us being part of the global village, there are also some challenges. We are more exposed to external shocks. One example of that showed how vulnerable we are to the external development is the recent the global financial crisis and the impact it had on our economy, including job losses, contraction of the economy, the development in terms of the current account deficit. There's a whole lot of impact, but for us as the Committee on Finance, it put more pressure on the fiscal management of our resources. So this table, it's adapted from the IMF. Regularly, the International Monetary Fund, they give us an update on what's happening globally. So what I want to highlight with this table is the projections, GDP projections in January 2014 and GDP projections in April 2014. If you look in this column, 2013, the global economic activity expanded by 3%. That was supported by a rebound in exports in the emerging markets. And then the IMF projected that in 2014, the global economy would grow at the rate of 3.7%. And that was expected to increase to 3.9% in 2016. And then if you look at the latest forecast in April 2014, the figure for 2014 has been revised down by 0.1 percentage point, whereas the figure for 2015 has been left unchanged. And also, in advanced economies, these are the UK, the Euro area, Japan, what else? And the US. Growth, okay. There's no change in terms of the revising down of the forecast. And then if you look at the emerging markets and developing countries, these are your BRIC countries, Brazil, China, India, Russia. They were expected to grow in 2014 by 5.1%. That has been revised down to 4.9%. That is a difference of 0.2 percentage points. Sub-Saharan Africa was supposed to be was forecast to be the fastest growing region in January, and that remains the same still in April currently. If you look on the last column, the figure or the forecast in 2014 of the region, Sub-Saharan Africa, it was revised down by 0.7 percentage points. And if you look at where that total 0.7 percentage point is coming from, it's South Africa, like 0.5 percentage point of it is coming from South Africa. I guess this is the point I want to emphasize, that we are dragging the region down as a country. We are lagging behind our peers in Sub-Saharan Africa and elsewhere. There's something that we are doing as a country that is not right. I think I will get to that point as I proceed in the presentation. I have spoken to the slide while I was explaining the table. All of it, I think. Coming to the domestic development now. It's the same principle. I've taken a couple of analysts, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, South African Reserve Bank, Bureau of Economic Research, the credit rating agencies, Fitch and Standard & Poor's, their projections at the time of the tabling of the national budget and their projections now. I'm saying December to 24, but most of them were in January actually. And here it's April to June, like the latest forecast between February and now in June. And there are some changes as well. In January, on average, the South African economy was expected to grow at 2.7%. As it is now, that figure has been revised down to 2%. And that would make 0.7 percentage points. I think that's huge in terms of economic growth. As you can see in the table before and after, or in January and between January and now in June, there has been some changes by almost all the analysts. They have revised down their forecast for the South African economy. So on average, it's 0.7%, but if you look at Fitch, the rating agency, they have taken away minus 1.1%. In terms of our committee, we take our cue from what National Treasury tables as their forecast. Twice in a year, during the MPDTS tabling in October each year, and in February each year. So during the tabling, the National Treasury expected the growth to be 2.7%. We are waiting for the latest forecast, which are going to be released only in October, the official ones from the National Treasury. Their assumptions for growth forecasts were mainly that the new power plants were going to be introduced, and that was going to boost the economy. And they were also the forecasts were also based on the assumption that stronger global recovery would support exports, and growth in Sub-Saharan Africa will promote expanded trade and investment. So economic growth prospects post February 2014. In the first quarter of this year, the economy contracted by 0.6%. Mainly, this was due to the mining-related strikes, which affected the mining and the manufacturing sectors. I think I've already spoken about the rest of the part where I'm saying, I'm emphasizing actually that the growth forecast has been revised down. There has been some changes between January and now, and those changes have got a bearing on the fiscal. Yeah, while we are still on the development in the economy, the reasons for reduced growth forecast by almost all analysts that I have indicated. The first reason was cited as the prolonged platinum strike activity. The second reason was the electricity supply constraints, because this has got an impact on economic growth. And the third reason was that the growth outlook has deteriorated and growth has been recovering at a very slow pace. The fourth reason that the analysts were concerned with are the risks posed by the strike action on the fiscal consolidation. The other economic developments that have got an impact on growth are the interest rate hikes, which have an impact on the consumer spending environment. It constrains that. We know that the interest rates were hiked by 50 basis points in April 2014, and the likelihood is that the next move would be an increase, maybe a smaller increase of 25 basis points, but the period of tightening monetary policy has definitely started. The unemployment rate stood at 25.2% in the first quarter of 2014, from 24.1% in the third quarter of 2013. So, the economy is also not creating enough jobs. I'm indicating there that the strike disputes in the platinum mines have been resolved as of June, but there is a possibility of some more strikes. But what does that mean? It means things have changed. It means the economy continues to grow below potential, pointing to the economy's susceptibility to shocks, both external and internal shocks. Internal would be referring to the mining strikes and electricity supply constraints and stuff like that. And it also means that if the economy is not growing, we can't create enough jobs to absorb new entrants in the labor market. And all the sectors that I have discussed, they have implications for the fiscal. What are the implications? Now, the South African government has adopted a counter-cyclical fiscal policy approach where government would increase spending during the recession and decrease spending during the economic boom or peak. So the global economic crisis resulted in a large budget deficit when the government had to maintain the social program, increase or borrow to fund some of the infrastructure plans that are before government. And that deficit, it has since remained high. And National Treasury has been revising revenue and growth forecasts downwards. It was expected that the deficit would narrow from 4% of GDP in 2013-14 to 2.8% of GDP in 2016-17. But that was assuming everything else being constant. That is, the economic growth remain as projected, and assuming that revenue collection would consequently pick up pace. The other implications are that, especially those of the credit rating agencies downgrading in South Africa, the impact there is increased cost of borrowing for businesses and government. It means increased debt servicing costs. It basically means that the fiscal space has been eroded by the rising debt. There is very limited scope to maneuver, whether you look at it from the fiscal policy perspective or monetary policy perspective. And there is also limited scope for government to allocate additional funds. There was a time when the economy was growing well before the recession, and the National Treasury was budgeting for a surplus. So during the MTDPS tabling, the minister would give additional money to departments, national, provincial, and local government. So I'm highlighting here that that scope is very limited. That is not consistent. So it means we must work with what we have, do more with less, if I were to quote the previous Minister of Finance. Having said that, what are the policy pronouncements to deal with some of the challenges that I have highlighted? The SONA actually acknowledged that South Africa needs to grow faster than it is currently growing. Government has prioritized the accelerated implementation of the NDP to address the structural problems that is the constraints that are preventing the economy to grow. Some of these constraints would be the skills profile, the education, investment in education, addressing high unemployment rates, inequality, poverty. But in addition to that, as short-term measures, NDP made provision for rollout of the infrastructure program. There's also a wide range of job creation initiatives, EPWPs, community works programs, the employment tax incentive specifically targeting youth unemployment, SMMEs. There has been prioritization of transforming the energy sector given the impact it has got on the economy. And there's also talk about partnerships, of strengthening partnerships and collaboration between labor, business, and the community. In terms of the budget review or the National Treasury or fiscal policy, the policy remains committed to maintaining fiscal sustainability and keeping debt within manageable levels. And Treasury continues with the fiscal consolidation path where government aims to reduce the budget deficit, although the goalpost keeps on shifting as the forecasts for growth and revenue are constantly revised down. These are some of the trends emerging from our engagements that we had with provinces. This is by no way the entire list of issues that we have picked up, but and also it's not all the provinces. For example, the last bullet would be capacity to spend the budget allocated, not necessarily translating into service delivery. The point in case would be the Western Cape province. They do have the capacity to spend, but whether that translates into service delivery remains to be it's debatable. So, yes, I know. Okay, I'm still intimidated. Okay, the issue is that in the provinces, the issue is not necessarily that there are not enough funds or there is not enough money, but it's how those finances are managed. The other issue is that the provinces table budgets that are not credible, and the projections are often not reliable. For example, a province or a department would budget to overspend but underspend or vice versa, without necessarily doing proper planning when making these projections, because departments have a tendency of wanting to have money even though they know they don't have the capacity to spend that money. The other issue that was picked up was the tendency of departments who've got public entities or implementing agencies to transfer money but not necessarily monitor that money has been spent fully and they don't report correctly on that. The other trend was performance target setting being conservative. What we mean by that is that the department would set its target very low, knowing that they will easily achieve that, and then they reflect in their APTs as target being overachieved, whereas it was not necessarily, let's say, I'll give a practical example. With the EPWP jobs, for example, the Department of Agriculture is tasked with that implementing the EPWP. So they will set a target of, say, 25,000 in 1 year. And then at the end of the year, they would achieve 37,000. But the following year, they would still predict 25, knowing that they have achieved it before, and they keep on doing that. So that's, in essence, what I mean by conservative performance target setting. The other problem is that of alignment between financial and non-financial performance remains poor. So this is the area that perhaps the committee should focus on going forward. In the municipalities, there are issues there, but in broad terms, or recurring issues across most municipalities would be lack of capacity, particularly in terms of financial management. And there is general non-compliance with the legislation and supply chain management processes. With regards to AG audit outcomes, the 2012-13 outcomes show a general improvement, but more needs to be done. I know Honorable from the Western Cape that Western Cape is the only province that has achieved a clean audit across all departments, if I'm not mistaken. So more needs to be done across the country. The other challenge is high vacancy rates in critical positions. So what must the committee do? The committee has got powers and functions conferred to it by legislation to influence budget policy decisions through effective implementation of the Money Bills Act, to ensure compliance with legislation, to enhance the financial health of the provincial departments and entities, conduct oversight visits to provinces and municipalities. This would come as our strategic objectives as we go into the strategic planning. So the committee must make sure that this happens, ensuring value for money in services delivered, strengthening coordinated support to municipalities, and continuously engaging with the provinces on a quarterly basis. In conclusion, the economic outlook has deteriorated. Growth is expected to be very modest. The mining and manufacturing production sectors are likely going to continue to struggle. Some analysts are already predicting that in the second quarter as well, we might see a contraction of the GDP, because the sectors that led to a contraction in the first quarter were still very much present in the second quarter. So that limited the scope for a second quarter growth rebound. However, I'm indicating again that the strike issues, particularly in the platinum mining, has been resolved. There is a likelihood, according to analysts, that growth in the second half of the year might start to pick up. And if the new electricity capacity could be introduced on time, those Kusile and Medupi power stations, that would help to stimulate economic growth, and also new ways to deal with labor market issues may assist growth. I'm also highlighting again that the current fiscal stance, revenue collection, debt, net debt levels, budget deficit, they have been modeled on growth forecast of 2.7% in 2014, that may have to be revised during the MPDPS tabling in October. And also I want to highlight that these economic uncertainties, they remain a key risk to fiscal sustainability, because the revenue that SARS collects is directly dependent on the rate at which the economy grows. Efficient as SARS may be, maybe in broadening the tax base or ensuring that they get as much revenue as possible from all of us individuals and businesses, at the end of the day, it's that revenue depends on economic growth rate. And given the emerging trends, the committee has a critical role to play in the management of finances of provinces and municipalities.
Thank you, Esther, for this presentation. Thank you for us for the information. All the members of your position. To get the picture question. I give them a top to the bottom.
Ma'am, you are quite dynamic. I thought maybe this is a men's territory, but you proved me somehow wrong. I'm not being sexist. You know, sometimes you only believe, no, this thing can only be done by us men, but at least today I'm happy. The way you unpack, you know, it's...
We are created all equal.
Yeah. But I think more points should go to her. Because, you know... well, ma'am, thanks so much. And I'm quite happy in the manner in which you put it. You know, as the first time I hear, I might have come across these things while, you know, I was doing my studies, but at least, you know, you're quite, you know, your presentation was quite enlightening. And I think by the end of the day, you can promote me to the position of Minister of Finance. With your assistance and your team, I can be able to do well. you mentioned, as you were unpacking the economic prospects fairly well, as I say. I'm interested in knowing where was our economy before it led us as a country where we are at the moment. Like you indicated the issue of this, before the economic environment changed and the recovery being slow and the outlook deterioration and other critical aspects. I want to know the percentage where the country was before that. And secondly, you drew to an end, you indicated that, you know, provinces, like finances are not being handled well or properly spent under these trends emerging in the three spheres of government. I also want to maybe put a comment at the same time as a question. But you know, I was happy, you know, about 5 years back in the term which ended now, when the president introduced the ministry in the, I mean, this department, which was actually meant by Minister Chabane, monitoring and evaluation. I would like to blame that to maybe the fact that I don't think it was correctly handled, because if you check all this much singing related to, you know, financial handling by municipalities and departments, like we keep on singing one song like underspending and maybe rollover of budgets to other financial years. I would like to blame monitoring and evaluation, because I still maintain this fact that if maybe it has started at local level, we have sections and departments at local level whereby before a tendering process, monitoring would come together with the committee that deals with the tendering process. To that would assist in making sure that the money allocated in particular projects should spend during that period. And we should not see things like, you know, passing over or rolling over the budget, because that has become a trend in both local municipalities and our departments. So wouldn't it be better maybe if maybe we could say we scrutinize monitoring and evaluation. I don't know if it still exists. Scrutinize as you know, a select committee and portfolio committee on finance. Because I like the manner in which Comrade Beard or Honorable Beard put it previously that he indicated that he was actually blamed to say the industry this that you know, the bomb was on the brink of collapse. I mean, when it comes to handling finances, and the same thing has been pointed at us. What are we actually doing now? Because you see, with this new let me say this fifth parliament with us around here, I would like to see these trends, you know, continue to happen, like rolling over budgets and understanding, because indeed it would disadvantage the communities out there who expect a lot from government. So I would think it be better as both a select committee on finance, both finance and appropriations, to make sure that we scrutinize this monitoring very, very closely. I thank you.
Who's next? Montara.
Hello, thanks, Chief. Indeed, it was a very comprehensive report that we have just received. On a lighter note, could it be for Chief to mention to become a minister of finance?
So you should reply to that as well.
The other thing is that from my previous employment, I know for a fact that monitoring and evaluation is not only located in the office of the president, as alluded to. Provincial chiefs, such units, municipalities, it's just that at the level of the president, it was elevated to that level, but it has been known in all the spheres. My point in terms of the presentation is the image in Spanish. I'm not sure if you have specific related issues to provinces. Because I think it is in those way general comments not covered provinces broadly, so that we are able to look at it and have a situation where we have a remedial type of a situation in terms of provinces where we come from. Thank you.
Thank you, other members. Just on the last point, excuse me, specific issues related to provinces, yes. There are specific issues which are captured in our reports that we tabled and was adopted in the ACP. So those reports are available and can be circulated to you to give you the background, actually in detail. What are the issues in provinces? Members, you see, when we meet with the provincial treasuries, we get the overall picture of the fiscal situation. That's what we do as finance. But then comes appropriations and zoom into specifics. Okay, agriculture, you didn't spend here, we're going to call you. That's the appropriations part. So that's how the two committees work together. And it works very, very well. So that's in our reports. The select committee don't deploy members. And we don't appoint ministers of finance. you first have to become a member of the ANC. That's another process, because you will have to go through an eye of a needle to get to the top. But that's on a lighter note. The economy, where we were and where we are now, yes, you will find it in the budget review. In the first two, three chapters. Because chapter 4 deals with the revenue proposals, tax. Very important chapter. Mm. But chapter 1, 2 and 3 will give the answer. Even if the National Treasury as well as the Bureau for Economic Research have detailed analysis since we started in 1994 as a democracy to give you that picture. What we inherited in 1994, it was devastating. Debt. And we came out of it. But there was growth. Now we have a declining growth. And it's very important that we get to the solution in the labor market. It's very important to have a monitoring program on the 847 billion rand allocated to infrastructure development. Because there's an Infrastructure Development Act. In terms of that, we are supposed to do our oversight as finance and appropriations. So it comes back to us to monitor and to get accountability from the ESCO. Esther?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start with a question on economic prospects. What was the growth rate before and currently? Between the period 2004 and 2008, before the recession, we were growing on average of 4 to 5%. I think this is the percentage that also informed the National Development Plan. And then currently in 2009, in 2013, the economy grew at 1.3%. Currently in the first quarter, the economy contracted again, just like this for the first time since 2009, the economy contracted. It's a worrying observation, because we know that we are growing below potential, because we know there was a period where we were growing at 4 to 5%. So we know if everything can be done as it should, the introduction of electricity and removal of other growth constraints, we can grow at 5% and more. So that would answer the question on economic prospects. The monitoring and evaluation, I know that this department was being monitored by the Standing Committee on Appropriations, but now it's with the Department of Public Service and Administration. I think that we can leave it with them. So, because in this committee, we don't necessarily deal with the department. I think Honorable Mr. Zero already responded to the other emerging trends question. Thank you.
That's it, all the members. Any follow-ups? Thank you. That concludes the presentations. Just to recap quickly regarding our program, the secretariats will reconfigure the meetings in cooperation with the provincial WIP and then inform us as a committee on that. Then on a very personal note, honorable members, one of our members, Donald Zondi, from KwaZulu-Natal, is on sick leave. This honorable member is not well. And when we go in the evening on our meet, before we go to sleep, when we pray, you must pray for this honorable member as well. He's going through a very, very difficult time. The other point on the members, we lost a leader of this institution late yesterday afternoon. in the person of the Honorable Ntuanambi, that was the former chief whip in the National Council of Provinces, a leader in her own right, as well as in the organization she represented, the ANC. We received SMSs last night, and I informed my province. We will be informed about funeral arrangements. But I'm going to ask you out of respect that we stand for a moment of silence, please. Thank you, honourable members. Let her soul rest in peace. It also gave direction for this institution. Honourable members, that brings us to the end of this business of the committee for today. Thank you for the staff for your presentations, including the staff in appropriations. I call them the A-Team. Years ago, there was a movie on TV called the A-Team. VA, I always watched it because they always succeeded. They never flopped. So I call them the A-Team. Stay as you are and improve. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Yeah, I'm just going to